The reflection this morning is the no that makes possible each yes. And it's by, primarily, by Victoria Safford, and that should be the name under it, because I knew if I was going to go to New York, I had the possibility to do that. I was going to get back yesterday afternoon and be late in the afternoon. And I said, I'm not going to be able to be present in New York if I'm working on a sermon. So I called Victoria Safford. I'd read her piece, and she said, oh, sure, that'd be great if you have permission to do that. The reason I'm telling you it like that, it's been a struggle to give myself that permission, because I got home yesterday and wanted to make it more contemporary to what had happened in my day. But then I sat down with it after I'd had several starts, and I said, okay, no, this is what needs to be said in the new year, because she does it so well, and she had given me that permission. So this is the no that makes possible each yes, and it's from Victoria Safford. She, by the way, was Charles Grady's minister. Charles Grady was a minister before me, for those of you don't know, and he and Claudine lived here until it just got to where they needed to live with their daughter, and they moved up there. But she was the minister at White Bear Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Minnesota, in White Bear, Minnesota. And she was Charles's minister in the last years of his life, and he had been minister there in the early, his first congregation there. The no that makes possible each yes. In Ramallah on the West Bank of Palestine, a little revolution took place 3 years ago. Completely nonviolent, completely joyful, irrevocably radical, though in some ways hardly noticeable. It's the kind of pinpoint event in the great sweep of history that could be seen either as the threshold of the future or the culmination of the past, or both. In a cramped office filled with desks and metal chairs, file cabinets, computers, a woman in a headscarf barked to her daughter, "Speak up! Raise your voice!" The daughter, a young woman, stood with her fiancé, with other family members gathered round, and for the first time ever in the Palestine, the officiant presiding over the civil marriage was a woman. Tahrir Hamad, who is 39, first applied for this official post in 2009 after working many years as a law clerk. She was denied. She persisted, encouraged by colleagues, male and female, but slandered by others, including a former professor of hers who posted on Facebook that her appointment would, quote, open the door of a metastasizing evil, close quotes. She persisted, even though the Islamic legal system there is archaic. The marriage contract is signed by the groom and the father of the bride and by two male witnesses. But finally, she prevailed, and the people of Ramallah have welcomed her. When Miss Ahmad officiates, she always asks questions of the couple and asks each to answer separately. Do you freely consent to this marriage? That's when the mother of the bride yelled out, "Speak up!" to her shy daughter. Something that mother might not have done with a male officiant. Miss Ahmad also asked each time if there are conditions to be stipulated in the marriage contract. The young woman standing before her whispered, and said afterwards that she'd had no idea that this was even possible. Mother, daughter, grandmothers in the room, little children there, nephews and nieces, and Miss Ahmad herself are all part of this great turning, brought about because someone, somewhere, many someones in succession looked at a tradition thousands of years old and simply said, no, this cannot stand. This no longer works for us. This makes no sense. This is not right. We will no longer exclude women from this work. And the spoken no of imagination then becomes the yes of possibility for everyone, not just for women. A no like that, a yes like that, challenges every assumption, opens all kinds of doors. She says, I've told you before, I think, that a little flower girl once said to me at a wedding, wow, this is so cool. I always thought that at weddings I'd have to be the bride. Meaning, this is so cool. I can be anything I want. I don't know if you remember me telling the story when Kendi was here, and Vicky told the story of God's hat, and Kendi had come from Colombia, and she was adopted, and she had come just a few months before, and she was about 8 or 9 years old. And Vicky Benavidez told the story of God's hat, and I won't tell that story, but at the end of the day, Kendi was so excited, and she goes, Mom, Mom, God's a woman. Rebecca Solnit is an American essayist and journalist. She writes about the future and the past, and she places her hope in the fact that we never really know for sure in the present how far resistance or imagination travel. She was born in 1961. That was the year, she says, the summer the Berlin Wall went up. How many of us were alive in 1961? Majority of us. The wall went up into a country in which there weren't even words, let alone redress, for many of the practices that kept women and people of color from free and equal citizenship, some of which practices continue, although now at least we do have words. A country in which homosexuality was diagnosed as a disease and treated as a crime, in which the ecosystem was hardly even a concept, and we were on hair trigger alert for a nuclear Armageddon. I was 9 years old and remember having to hide under my school desk as if that would make a difference. It was a world with more rainforest, more ozone layer, more species, but few were defending those things then. The world gets worse. It also gets better. She writes about hope in the dark, not the bleak and scary dark, but the dark that is inscrutable, unknowable, the futures that is not here yet, but could be shaped in certain ways if we would speak and live by principle. If we would say no out loud when no is called for, and say yes to everything we can imagine, begin to paint the picture, to make the vision, the idea, real. Can you imagine, for example, having seen the news, and she was referring to just that last week, on Thursday, which was the news of a shooting in Oregon in 2015 when 10 beautiful young students were killed. Imagine the news we saw after Parkland or Thousand Oaks. Can you imagine living in a country that has the will, the moral imagination, the backbone, the spine, the prophetic courage, the common sense, the common decency and intelligence to say no once and for all to the National Rifle Association and what it's pushing at this time? Imagine our country. Imagine the lives of the parents of first graders in Connecticut and every other state, and the parents of high school students everywhere, and community college students and other college students, people on military bases and people praying in their churches, people on the street and police officers working in the crosshairs of danger, and everybody else, if we could muster the wherewithal to say yes to life, yes to possibility, to a civilized society by saying no to the so-called right to have a gun in every American hand. The president at the time said rightly, this simply doesn't happen anywhere else. Not like this. It doesn't. Sometimes the only way to say yes is no. The only way to freedom is to say no. And she says, and I say, I quickly say, I don't mean hunting. I don't mean having a gun for that recreational pursuit. I mean saying yes out loud to the fragile beauty of everything. Yes out loud to the fragile beauty of everything. We do it all the time. This no and yes so valiantly in small and humble, miraculous ways, in little revolutions. We look at the world as it is and suddenly glimpse the world as it could be, and then we can't go back. We move through the patterns, traditions, the habits of things as they are, as if they were immutable, intractable. And then by grace or will or luck, we wonder, but what if? You've known this. You've seen it. Have you acted on it? You have lived this maybe more than once, unanticipated, but that deliberate transformation, unexpected power. How many people have come into my office? How many people do you yourself know who have told a story something like this? I love my parents and my family of origin. But the life I've made as an adult and am still making is very different from the one I came from. I don't know exactly how or when, but at some point, I said no to violence, emotional or physical violence. I said no to emotional violence. I just wasn't going to live like that. I made a different kind of home. Or I said no to the casual, habitual racism of family dinner table jokes, or the sexism, or homophobia, or whatever it was. It was not huge in our lives, but quietly ever present, and I grew up one day and I said, no more. At my table, that will not go unchecked. Some loved ones can't forgive me, but I'm holding fast. Or I said no to corporal punishment for children. I said no to the shaming of anyone. I said no to religion I didn't believe in. I said no to silence when speaking was important. And I said no to idle talk when it was better to be quiet. Or I said no to alcoholism. This could be someone in recovery himself or someone who loves someone and still he had to say no. She had to say no loudly, clearly, repeatedly, to her own self in the mirror and to others at great risk. Said no to the swirling chaos that addiction conjures in a household. No to enabling it. No to tolerating its catastrophic consequences. No to forgiving its sins. No to saving other people's lives rather than our own. No to looking the other way. No to trying endlessly to placate and to please. No to smoothing over ruffled feathers, trampled feelings. No to the numbness of having no feelings at all. No to self-denial, self-incrimination, self-loathing, self-blame. The person says, or maybe you have said, this sounds so negative. All this naysaying. But no has made possible each yes in my life. Every lovely, cherished thing. I once was lost, and now I'm not. It's not easy. Frederick Buechner, Presbyterian novelist and minister, says sometimes it feels selfish, and in certain ways it is, this reclamation of self. In a memoir in which he recalls family members living with addiction, dysfunction, and depression, Buechner writes, we've talked a lot about love your neighbor. He writes, love your neighbor as yourself is part of the great commandment. But the other way to say it is love yourself as your neighbor. Love yourself, not in some egocentric, self-serving sense, but love yourself the way you would love your friend, in the sense of taking care of yourself, nourishing yourself, trying to understand, comfort, and strengthen yourself. Sometimes the only honest way to say I love you is to say as tenderly and relentlessly as you've ever said anything, no. No, this can't continue. No, I cannot help you. I will say yes to your life and to mine by saying no, because I love us both. Imagination is powerful. It surveys the given world, dysfunctional, dystopian, archaic, constrained, and glimpses possibility. And from resistance to ill health, to bad practice, oppression, from that sacred no, a yes starts taking shape. You gather your principles, your rules for living, convictions. You decide what kind of person right now you intend to be, that you're called to be. And from that solid ground comes compassion, generosity, and the strength to love. You decide what you do and do not want, what you need in this life and what you really don't. I think of Inazo Natobe, the samurai turned Quaker, who gave his life for peace in the end, and who could name with such clarity those things to which he would say yes, and those to which he could, with grace, say no. I ask for daily bread, but not for wealth, lest I forget the poor. I ask for strength, but not for power, lest I despise the meek. I ask for wisdom, but not for learning, lest I scorn the simple. Wisdom, but not for learning. I ask for a clean name, but not for fame, lest I condemn the lowly. And I ask for peace of mind, but not for idle hours, lest I fail to hearken to the call of service. No, and yes, both clarify our ethics, and I would say our faith in the way of making meaning in our lives. The spark of it is in us all along. On a Wednesday night, a toddler friend of mine was playing on the floor. She says in the middle of the hallway, she'll remain nameless, but then she gives her father's name. She had toys strewn around her and a bevy of admirers and playmates, I not least among them. People began arriving for the Wednesday dinner, and so her innocent but misguided papa started to pick up the toys and say something inappropriate like, time to clean up. He came closer and closer to where she was sitting, and she saw him coming, toys in his hands, all gathered up, and the storm clouds on her face grew threatening. Silence descended as she gathered her strength. I'm not sure her dad noticed. And then this tiny girl stood up on her tiny legs and put out her hand. Papa, she said sternly, stop! It was archetypically beautiful. I don't think Dad caught that aspect of it. It was the triumph of the will. It was agency, integrity, all those things we talk about in baby dedications. It was, I want to live in this world, the world of toys and friends and endless time, not dinner time, not high chair time or cleanup time. Stop! She was like Diana Ross. Stop! In the name of all that is good and right and true, you shall not pass. The toddler lost that particular round, but the fire's inside her. We'll see that flare again. Colby's in the back of the room just sort of going, yep, I get that. And together with all of you, all of us, her wise parents will remind her of words she heard when she was really small. We all remind each other all the time. May you never unlearn your sweet gentleness. May you keep tame that which rages dangerous within us all. And yes, may you respect yourself and envy none. And yes, may you remember who you uniquely are. May you win no victory that harms either yourself or another. May you give sympathy to all living things, including yourself. and by your actions lessen the tides of human sorrow. And yes, may you go singing your heart's own song. Louise Erdrich, the novelist, says, I hold the word no in my mouth like a gold coin, something valued, something possible. To teach the no to our daughters, to value their no more than their compliant yes, to celebrate no, to grasp the word no in your fist and refuse to give it up, to support the boy who says no to violence, the girl who will not be violated, the woman who says no, 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 I will not, to love the no, to cherish the no, which is so often our first word, no, the means to transformation. One final story. She read about a camp for Syrian refugees in Jordan, and I would tell you that it's been 4 years ago, but my daughter Hannah visited that camp. Not visited, but went with it as a class for a part of a grassroots human rights study around the world. Visited that class camp in Jordan, and it's still inside her. Unlike Europe and the West, the Jordanians opened their border. It's been now 7 years ago to refugees. Hundreds of thousands of people have come in. 80,000 of them live in this camp 50 miles from Amman, the nation's capital. Imagine that. A refugee camp 50 miles from your nation's capital. And although they only have intermittent electricity and must carry water, both drinking water and wastewater, by hand, they live in tents or concrete buildings. A kind of community has been established. There are makeshift markets. There are 2,500 of them, a whole economy now. It generates $14 million a month by one UN estimate. But people plant gardens and trees, olives and lemons, the fruits from which they hope they won't be there to see, because a camp should be a temporary place. But still, one man says, we call this the white city. The sand is white, the tents are white, the sky. But he has small children, and so he's planted corn. He's planted corn, tomatoes, fruit trees, sunflowers, because he said children should see colors. Commitment to fragile beauty. Children should see colors, living green. He needs them to see beauty in the garden and care and pride and patience. He moved all the soil from a construction site miles away on the other side of the camp in buckets on a bicycle. He teaches his children poetry and music. Essentially, he's saying, he and countless others are saying, no, we will not die, and we will not live like animals. No, we will not succumb to subhumanity. No, and then that yes. This man also says that if the chance came to leave tomorrow for Germany, for Sweden, or to go home to Damascus, they'd go in a heartbeat, because he also says no, absolutely, unequivocally, to the identity of refugee. No, we will not relinquish our personhood, nor the hope that holds us to our home and also to our future of possibility. This is the no that makes possible each yes for the children of our children, of our children's children. It is the means to every transformation. On December 14th, Friday, John Owens asked me to give the prayer to a vigil marking the 6th anniversary of the shootings in Newtown. And I called Chris Bice, who's the minister of the Knoxville congregation, to say, Chris, at the Knoxville congregation, you congregation had been invaded by an intruder who shot and killed two people in the congregation. It's now been 10 years ago. I said, Chris, you do a lot of this. Help me with a prayer here. He said, I use a prayer of St. Francis, and then I adapt it. But it's interesting. So I did that, and we held it on the 17th, so it was Monday, because Friday was that storm. That Victoria uses the prayer of St. Francis in closing to this. Lord, make us channels of thy peace, that where there is hatred, that no, we may bring love. Where there is wrong, we may bring the spirit of forgiveness. Where there is discord, we may discover and reveal harmony. Where there is discord, we may discover and reveal harmony. Where there is error, we may embody truth. Where there is doubt, we may bring the spirit of inquiry. Where there is despair, we may bring hope. And where there are shadows, we may bring light. Where there is sadness, we may bring solace. For it is in giving that we shall receive, by self-forgetting that we shall find, and by forgiving that we shall be forgiven. May we seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, and may we strive to love more than to be loved.